Juliet Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello and welcome to episode 34 of Dogcast Radio. How does this lot sound? First this.
This is number 6, I think. Well, it might be number 7, I can't remember. But I did it for guide dogs before. And then we've had a 14-year gap. And then went back and then thought, well, maybe dogs are disabled. You know, we have a wheelchair, you know, we've got overhead tracking, hoists and things. So they get all that experience.
Then this.
This time we're having an arty theme. If you like dogs and enjoy drawing or colouring, I've got some great links for you.
And maybe then a little bit of this.
Well, we finish on a story about a dog and a gas problem.
Well, all dogs can have gas at some time.
OK, but before any of that, Mim Edwards' dog training advice is always brilliant, and we know you love it because you've told us you do. So we thought we'd bring you a bit more.
Mim, today I thought we'd talk about dogs and cars and how we can get our dogs into our cars, travel in our cars and out of our cars safely.
That's a really good question, Julie, and something that the majority of people don't actually give a real lot of thought to, perhaps not like they would with house training and stuff like that. I guess the very first thing I want to say is that with very small puppies or very small dogs, one of the worst things people could probably do is let them travel on your lap. I know we want to be reassuring with very small puppies, but really the best way to travel with very small dogs is in a crate or some sort of pet travel pack, so that the dog actually feels secure. I mean, certainly you don't want to put a very small dog in the back seat of the car to, you know, move up and down the street as the car goes around the corner. The dog would feel quite insecure. But I know for a fact that dogs that would travel in a crate or some sort of pet carry pack will travel a lot better if they're more confined rather than less confined. So training your dog to travel in the car goes hand in hand with training your dog to do any number of other things. Basically, you need to teach the dog to wait to be allowed to get into the car and wait to be allowed to get out of the car. One of the worst things that people can do is open the door and just allow the dog to jump out willy-nilly without asking the dog to wait. Ideally, the dog should travel in some sort of harness attached to a seatbelt or behind a pet barrier in one of the station wagons. But you still need to teach the dog to wait as you open the door. And you do that in perhaps a separate training scenario. And you might even do it at one of the doors inside your house, if you know what I mean. And the way you might start that, for example, is have the dog on lead. Ask the dog to sit. Hold up your hand like a stop sign, almost the same as you would start the stay command. Ask the dog to wait. Have your treats handy. Put your hand on the doorknob and perhaps rattle the knob. And before the dog has a chance to even register, reward the dog with a treat. So bit by bit, you might rattle the knob. Then you might turn the knob, open the door slightly and shut it before the dog gets up. Treating and rewarding every step of the way. Then you might open the door a crack. If the dog should happen to get up, just repeat the command, Fluffy, sit, wait, use the lead to help you get the behaviour, rewarding the whole time. If you start these behaviours in the house where there perhaps isn't so much urgency to get somewhere, then certainly they carry over into the car situation. And one of the things I love doing is taking the dog out on lead, putting my foot on the lead, and just using the lead and my foot to manage the dog in that situation where you might open the door a crack, ask the dog to sit, wait, open the door a crack, reward the dog before the dog gets in, and then eventually progress to opening the door all the way, still having the dog sit and wait and rewarding every step of the way, and then picking up the lead and giving the dog permission to jump into the car, whether it's the back seat or the back parcel behind a dog barrier or something like that. So in a nutshell, I guess, we need to teach the dog, when I give you the command wait, show me some self-control. And better to do it when you're not so much in a hurry, and do it in a wide variety of situations. I certainly use wait when I'm giving the dogs their dinner, and I'm sure a lot of people do. And the command wait to me basically means stop, look and listen, because I'm going to ask you to do something else. So you ask the dog to wait for permission to get into the car. More importantly, when you get somewhere, and often when we're driving our dogs to the local park or oval or to the doggy park to have a run with its mates, basically the dogs are so excited that that's probably where you need the wait even more. Teach the dog that I don't care how excited you are, if I've asked you to wait, I want you to show me a bit of self-control. You're not going anywhere until you sit quietly. You're not going anywhere until, you know, you stop vocalising, barking or running up and down the back seat. Basically, sit and wait. I'll reward you very well for doing that, but you're only going to get out to see your friends when you're very, very quiet. And if you start that at a very young age, all of those behaviours, you'll soon get a dog that you're able to open up the door, have the dog sit and wait, open up the door while you get things like poo bags or bum bags or buckets and spades if you're going down to the beach, or water bowls or whatever it is, and then you can pick up the lead, ask the dog to come out, shut the door, lock the car and off you go. So I guess that's in a nutshell. Start the puppy early. Have the dog confined in a smaller area rather than a larger area. Try and avoid the situation where you're going to have a small dog on your lap. Most people don't tend to have large dogs on their lap for obvious reasons, but little dogs tend to get treated in a more babyish sort of way, I guess. I mean, certainly you would never attempt to carry your baby in a moving car, so I really don't know why people think that it would be okay to carry a small dog in their lap in a moving car. And just teach the dog, show me a bit of self-control. I'll reward you for it, but that's basically what you have to do.
I think you're absolutely right about the safety aspect of the actual travelling. You know, we look after our humans properly, and they're all properly restrained in the car. You've got to do the same for your dogs.
Absolutely. You can imagine if you brake suddenly, you'll end up with a little missile travelling through the car. Certainly here where I live in South Australia, it's been made law just in the last year that dogs must either travel in a crate or in a harness attached to a seatbelt in the back seat, not allowed in the front seat at all, or behind a dog barrier or parcel shelf in a wagon situation. So that's been made law over here.
I guess people think they're being cruel to the dog, you know, being kind to the dog if they keep them with them, and they're being cruel to them if they sort of put them away in the boot or whatever. But
I think you're probably right, and a lot of that might stem from what you were saying of people being kind to the dog, and the dog may whimper or act a little bit anxious, or indeed from a very young age may feel really unsafe in the car, may even vomit or have accidents in the car, they're so anxious. Certainly I've seen dogs that have done that, and they think that if they have the dog on their lap, they're actually reassuring the dog. But it doesn't take long. I've seen plenty of people driving around here with dogs sitting on their lap actually while they're driving. I'm sure you've seen them over there as well. A dog's having a high old time, you know, with its head through the out the window, and the driver's driving. I mean, we're not even allowed to drive with a mobile phone to our ear. I hate to think what would happen if a person like that braked suddenly.
I think as well, it does have, apart from the safety of the dog, it does have insurance implications as well. Because I think that would be breaking the terms of your insurance. And I know someone who was in an accident with dogs in the car, And they weren't restrained, and the insurance person was saying, well, look, you know, this, we're going to have to look into this. I'm not sure if we're going to pay out on this.
What an excellent point. You know, even I hadn't considered that. I mean, we tend to think about things like safety and reassuring young dogs, but I hadn't actually considered the insurance angle at all. And while you were saying that, a whole bunch of scenarios just flashed through my mind of, you know, small dogs ending up under your legs while you're driving and getting caught under pedals. I mean, the mind boggles, really. But, yeah, you're probably right. Insurance probably wouldn't pay.
No. I think it's dreadful. I think the other thing, you know, the weight command that we're talking about, there's so many general benefits to that command. And it's kind of a reminder to the dog, you know, hey, you're not in charge in this situation. I am. It's just what you say, sort of, look to me, I'm going to tell you what to do, isn't it?
Yeah, it is amazing, isn't it? And it's such a beneficial command. Often one of the things that we tend to forget is that we actually hold all the cards. Dogs really can't do anything without us. They can't eat without us. They can't go to the park. They can't get better if they're unwell. They can't normally let themselves in or out of the house. They certainly can't go for car rides. And yet some of us are really held hostage in our homes with our dogs demanding attention or having lots of attention-seeking behaviour. I mean, heavens, they don't have opposable thumbs, they can't open cans, they can't open the refrigerator. It's extraordinary, really, isn't it?
It is. They've got those eyes, though. And they look at you and think, oh, all right then.
Well, that's very true. In that respect, I guess they're like nagging children, aren't they, in the aisle of the shopping centre with all the chocolates or something like that.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I think the other very relevant thing you said is start it early. And you'll be amazed how young a dog can get the hang of, I really want that treat, but if I don't wait or put my bottom on the floor or whatever it is, I'm not going to get that lovely treat. And they very quickly realise, okay, it's better to cooperate and then I get the thing I want.
Yeah, look, you know, you're absolutely dead right there. I often get people coming to class with really out of control dogs, often out of control adolescent dogs. And they get dragged into class and often they're yelling and shouting and no and come here and, you know, calling the dog's name and giving a million sick commands. And often just to give them a break and let them catch their breath, I'll just take the lead and stand on the lead and do nothing. And the dog might be trying to jump up or trying to get to another dog or whatever. And I find that if you just wait and do nothing, eventually the dog will do something that you can reward. It might be look up at you, it might be suddenly sit or lay down, and bang, that's a rewardable moment. And I find that within a very short amount of time, I can start rewarding the dogs. It's almost like jump starting a car when you've got a flat battery. Once you start, and I actually call it jump starting the dog as well, once you start actually plying treats into the dog for doing the things that you do want, I find that the dogs become a lot more focused, and then you can really, really start working the dog. That weight command and showing a bit of self-control, that's right up there with the most important things that you can teach dogs. Basically, what we want as humans is for our dogs to do nothing, really. When you think about it, we don't want our dogs to bark. We don't want them to run and jump and harass other people. We don't want them to jump on the fence or you know, hoon around in the car. We basically want them to do nothing. Those are the best dogs. Those are the dogs that society seems to tolerate the best. So those are the things that we have to reward. So, you know, teaching the dog to wait, teaching the dog to show a bit of self-control, whether it's in the car, out the car, those are all really important things.
Well, Mim, excellent advice as usual, and I hope you've inspired some people this morning to get some training done.
Oh, thanks, Julie. It's always an absolute pleasure talking to you.
And it's always a pleasure to talk to Mim, because as well as a great trainer, she's a lovely person. I hope that advice has been useful for you, and to find out more, you can go to Mim's site via the link on the Dogcast site. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcast.com. dogcastradio.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. Do you remember Rusty, the overweight Labrador in the UK, whose weight had rocketed to more than twice what it should be?
I do. His owners were found guilty of causing unnecessary suffering to their dog. They were given a 3-year conditional discharge and ordered to pay £250 costs.
That's right. Well, the good news is that whilst in the care of the RSPCA, Rusty has returned to a much healthier weight. And happily, he has now returned home too. A condition of the reunion of Rusty and his owners is that Rusty's weight loss is maintained. And to ensure that this happens, the RSPCA will be helping oversee his care. So, if Rusty keeps up his weight loss, he'll be a winner.
In Australia, the New South Wales government is launching a new education program to teach young children how to stay safe around dogs. The Safe Pets Out There, or SPOT program, is setting out to teach younger primary children about pet care and kindness and respect for all animals. The program has been developed by the RSPCA, the Animal Welfare League, the Australian Veterinary Association, and Delta Society Australia. Apparently, half of all serious dog bites in Australia occur to children under the age of 10, so the SPOT program will hopefully help children learn how to interact safely. For more information, there's a link on the Dogcast site.
And now to two working dogs, one excelling at his job, the other not doing quite so well. In Australia, a sniffer dog has found over $70,000 of cannabis hidden in luggage. The 6-year-old black Labrador, called Crash, made the find at Adelaide Airport, and it is estimated that the equivalent of 2,000 drug sales have been thwarted. Apparently, this is Crash's biggest result so far, and his reward? Well, simply a game of tug-of-war with his favourite toy.
Meanwhile, in Dusseldorf, Germany, while a guard dog answered the call of nature, almost $2 million worth of jewellery was stolen. The dog was meant to be protecting the jewellery, which was in transit from Germany to Austria, but the robbery occurred when the dog was being given a toilet break. Possibly the most expensive toilet break in the world.
Well, we finish on a story about a dog and a gas problem.
Well, all dogs can have gas at some time.
No, not that kind of gas. The dog in question belongs to Salma Hayek. Salma was asleep in her house when Clever Diva woke her up and pulled her out of the house. Initially puzzled by Diva's actions, Salma soon became aware that there was a gas leak in the house and that Diva had saved her life.
And that's all from us at the Dogcast News Desk. Goodbye.
The process of having the Greater Swiss Mountain Dog recognised in the UK is carrying on. And to celebrate the arrival of this breed, a Swissy Fun Day was held recently. This was a great day with Swissies and many other dogs there, notably Bernese Mountain Dogs, another Swiss breed. We took our dogs along, and Buddy found a friend in another black Labrador. However, this black lab is probably not destined to be purely a pet dog.
I'm here at the Swissy Fun Day and I'm talking to Beryl. But you've come to the Swissy Fun Day, but you've brought a Labrador. You brought a Labrador and a Bernese, haven't you?
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about the Labrador.
Yeah.
Because there's something special about the Labrador.
Oh, he's special. He's
well,
lovely.
All Labradors are special, aren't they?
Especially black ones.
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> But you're getting him ready for a special job, aren't you?
Yeah. 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 So it's a dog for the disabled puppy. Mm. Puppy walking.
Yeah.
Socialising, they call it now, not puppy walking. So I've had him since he was... Actually, I had him quite late. I had him at 14 weeks.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And how old is he now?
He's 7 months.
7 months. Yeah. And how long will you keep him?
I'll have him till he's 12 months.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And then he goes into the centre. He has an 8-week assessment to see if he's got the right qualities. And then he'll do his initial basic training. And then he'll go on and to be matched with an individual with a disability, and then he'll do his advanced training relative to what he needs to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And hopefully pass. A lot of them don't.
Yeah. And have you done this before?
Yeah, this is number 6, I think. Or it might be number 7, I can't remember. But I did it for guide dogs before. And then we've had a 14-year gap because I had a disabled lad. And then went back and then thought, well, maybe dogs are disabled, we have a wheelchair, you know, we've got overhead tracking hoists and things, so they get all that experience with me before You know, so it's all really, really advanced for them, you know. Yeah.
And what is your job description?
I'm a socialiser.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, do you do any training or what do you actually...
With the pups?
Yeah.
Well, officially, we do basic training. So, basic obedience training, you know, not jumping on furniture, not jumping on people when they come. And then most of it is taking them out and about and meeting as many different things, situations. Take them to town a lot, on buses, on trains, anywhere and everywhere, really, that we can. I mean, they are trained clicker training for their actual job, you know, their task work. But we sort of have to be a bit careful about what clicker training we do with them.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, some people do get good at clicker training and they're not.
Yeah.
And so you can do a lot of harm, you know. But I mean, I'll probably teach mine to hit a target with a paw, push with their nose. Lots of retrieve work,
yeah.
You know, mega amount of retrieving, picking up anything and everything, lots of different objects, and putting, not only retrieving the hand, but putting it onto your knee, and then teach them to put their head in the washing machine.
Yeah.
So we start off with toys in the washing machine, so they just go and fetch their toy, and then start off with a sort of dry object, and then perhaps a wet object, you know, so... I actually have a cardboard washing machine now.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier than all trying to pile into the utility room. Because my Bernese thinks that, like, I can do it. Get out, puppy.
Yeah.
I know how to do this.
Oh. Is that an advantage, sort of, already having your Bernese? You know, I'm thinking of things like toilet training and you said the basic.
Yeah, I think dogs learn from dogs, and it does make life easier for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we have to teach to go to toilet on command, which is dead easy to do.
Yes.
it is really easy. People think it's
really,
it's really clever, but it's not. It's really quite basic. And, you know, because really they must never spend on lead.
No.
Certainly not when they've got the coats on. Mm. And that is really, really get your hands wrapped if that happens.
Yeah.
So.
And do you have to go sort of back to the centre and do more training there, or is it the dogs with you?
Because I've done so much before, and I mean I take my own puppy classes and things, have my own puppy training group along with someone else, they don't really bother me too much. They come out once a month and they go out with us and see that there's no issues. And obviously, if you've got a training issue, then they'll take it up with, if you're doing something they shouldn't think you should be doing, they'll take it up with you. And they do organise. Unfortunately, I'm the only person in Coventry that does it, so there's nobody around me. But in the areas where they've got little groups of people, they organise social meetings where they go and they take their puppy, and the puppy have to ignore the other puppies.
Yeah.
So they all sit and drink a cup of tea, you know, in a cafe or something, and all the puppies have to ignore each other.
Yeah.
Which is rather a shame that I don't get the opportunity to do it.
But
they are just about starting to run some sort of training classes. Once every month or so.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you are somebody, you know, if you're somebody that hasn't got...
If you're somebody new.
Yeah,
yeah.
That somebody that hasn't got your training background, you know, and you still want to help, the support is there for you.
Oh, yes. I mean, it's as much support as you need.
Yeah.
And if you've got a puppy that's sort of showing, sort of, no, I mean, I know someone whose puppy's not been a bit of a bee, and they'll take it back into the centre, you know, and see if it's an issue, a puppy issue, or it's a it's a home issue.
Yeah.
You know, so that they can identify, take it away, identify what it is,
and then
and then either sort the puppy out, or give you some strategies to deal with it, or correct your training methods.
Yeah. You know. And I guess the other question for anybody that sort of is thinking about doing this, you know, is how do you feel when you've had this puppy for almost a year?
That's what everybody says.
And it
how
goes.
Do you let him go? How can you do it? It's not easy. I'd not say to anybody it's easy. It's not. You know, when they come, they're not your puppy. The one I've got at the moment, you know, he's had OCD in his elbow, so he's had operations, and there is a big question mark, will he be fit? You know, and he is one that I'll say, I'm definitely going to keep you if they don't use you. But
someone said to me, I bet you wish he wasn't making good recovery, don't you? And I said, well, no, I don't, because, no, that's his job. Mm. That's what his job is. And if I don't wish he didn't couldn't do it. You know, yes, it'd be lovely for him to stay, but, you know you've got to do it, and you have to do it, and you learn to cope with it.
Yeah.
And you get a new one straight away.
So. Well, yes, you just soften the blow.
And sometimes they give it before, so you get an overlap, and then it's like, you're so busy that take one away, please.
Yes, please. Yeah. I guess as well, when you've seen an assistance dog working or a guide dog working with the person, and you've seen the real difference that the dog makes, you know, it's a small sacrifice to
make. It is. And it's not like having a dog put to sleep. It's not like losing a dog. When they've finished their training, we get opportunity to go into the centre and see them doing all the tasks that they've been taught, which is really nice.
Yeah.
And then the person who has them gets given a name and address and encouraged to contact us.
Yeah.
And some do, some don't.
Yeah.
But it's nice to get photos of them working.
Yeah.
You know, so nice. But then others you never hear from. And then if they decide they're not going to use it for whatever reason, you know, whether it's health grounds or it's, you know, it just hasn't got the right personality, then we get first chance to have them back as a pet.
Mm.
And if you say no, which you sometimes have to,
you
just can't keep increasing the size of your family. Yeah. And then they've got a list of people waiting for them, and they're adopted. And then sometimes you hear from them again. Yeah. I had a Christmas card from one that was adopted, you know, saying how much difference, although he hadn't managed to be a dog for the disabled, he'd helped the lady so much.
Yeah.
You know, just being there.
Yeah.
He really was doing a wonderful job anyway.
Yeah.
You know, which was nice.
The thing is that they are very fortunate dogs, because, you know, I know your dog's had a health problem, but usually, you know, they are bred or they are chosen, you know, they're going to be healthy dogs. They have a lot of training. You know, anybody that they end up living with has been vetted very carefully.
Yeah, that's right.
They're very fortunate dogs.
Yeah,
aren't they?
I mean, they're going to have the best of attention all through their lives.
Yeah.
You know, so
Well, best of luck with yours then. I hope he does make a recovery.
Yeah, he will, I'm sure he will. Yeah. And he's a lovely dog.
Yes, he is. Thank you.
Okay.
Fingers crossed that Beryl's dog does make a full recovery and go on to be a great assistance dog. If you'd like to find out more about dogs for the disabled, there's a link on the Dogcast site.
And now, for our younger listeners, it's puppy playtime! Hi, and welcome to Puppy Playtime. This time we're having an arty theme. If you like dogs and enjoy drawing or colouring, I've got some great links for you. Younger children might like to try an activity from the PBS website. This involves making a dog paper plate puppet. On the Talk to the Vet site, there are pictures to print off and colour in of dogs, as well as many other animals. If you'd like to find out about different breeds, then try an Enchanted Learning site. Here there is some information as well as a labelled illustration for each breed. If you like pictures of dogs but prefer having most of the work done for you, then try the Critter Card site. Here there are beautiful photos of dogs and other animals, including wolves and foxes. You can send the photos as email greetings. If you really enjoy drawing and painting, we'd love to see your pictures and put them on the Dogcast site. I'll do some drawings to start you off, and there's no age limit, so if you're an artist, whatever age you are, send us one of your masterpieces. Till next time, have fun with your dogs and make sure your dog has fun with you.
If you have, or have ever had, a dog in your life, you know just how intense the bond between you can become. I'm always moved by each story I come across that demonstrates the strength and depth that this relationship can reach. Though I've seen it in others and have experienced it myself, I found it fascinating to see it happening between my daughter Jenny and her young dog, Star. They bonded very early, and even on the first day in our house, it was Jenny's legs Star chose to run behind as a shield between her and whatever she found threatening or new. Star definitely knows who her mum is and reserves her most enthusiastic greetings for Jenny. Should Star ever come across her young mistress still in bed on a weekend morning, even though the rest of us are up and about and available as companions, she forgets herself completely, and Jenny's squeals of protest echo round the house as Star leaps around the bed in utter delight. The ability of a dog to attach herself to her human came as no shock, but I was surprised by how quickly and seriously Jenny took to her role as carer and protector. I remember the day when Jenny hurried to me, Star clutched in her arms. "There's something wrong with Star," she wailed, tears already filling her eyes. "Her tummy's going to explode." I was alarmed, hurriedly examined the dog, and gave my diagnosis. Hiccups. Jenny's instant relief soon turned to indignation when she saw me smiling, but in truth, I was amused at a memory. It reminded me of the time when Buddy was a small puppy and I noticed blood in his stool. I can vividly remember cradling what I was convinced was a seriously ill dog in my arms and drenching his fur with my tears. A visit to the vet revealed colitis, which he grew out of. When Star was neutered, she obviously felt very poorly for 48 hours, and Jenny was a terrific nurse. For 2 days, she sat on the sofa with Star draped across her. At times, Star would issue a sharp whine and whip her head round to her tummy. More heartbreaking was her gentle whimpering protest at her aches and pains. Throughout that time, Jenny was on hand to hold little pots of water and tempting delicacies to persuade Star to eat and drink. She administered tablets and general reassurance. Again, memories were stirred of a young Buddy who suffered 2 severe bouts of stomach upsets, so bad he even refused water. The worry was excruciating, and so I knew what Jenny was going through on behalf of her dog. Countless other occasions have proved my young daughter's thorough devotion to her dog, and I'm pleased for her beyond words that she's found such a source of love which will be a constant joy, though sometimes admittedly a heartache, for the rest of her life. For such is the power of a dog. They work their way into our hearts and become such an essential part of our lives. For those of us who love dogs, this is an easy process that happens fast, and it must indeed be a hard heart that can withstand a dog's charms. My husband was not particularly enthusiastic about dogs, and it has been just as interesting for me to witness his relationship with our dogs, but I will save that story for another time. Suffice it to say that a milestone was reached when we were discussing the fact that some people find it distasteful to eat in the presence of dogs. My husband commented, "Well, before I was a dog person, I felt like that." That phrase was magical. Before I was a dog person. And at that moment, I knew we had him. He had come over to the dog side. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. We found another article underlining the health benefits of sharing your life with a dog. Lower blood pressure and cholesterol, reduced stress, enhanced social contacts, and many more aspects of dog ownership have a beneficial effect on us. And of course, the regular exercise is a bonus. There's a link to the article on the Dogcast site, along with 2 others, one about children with pets being healthier, and one about allowing pets to visit owners in hospital. On the subject of pets being allowed to visit their people in hospital, I do think that's an excellent idea. I remember a great uncle of mine who had been in hospital a while, and in his dying hours repeatedly asked for his dog, but we just couldn't arrange it. For anyone who loves a dog, you can empathise with the heartbreak that caused and the regret it still causes. Dogs not only make us healthier and happier, they're family. And why should we be denied access to them just because we're ill? When we had our wolf interview, we had great feedback. So I know lots of you are interested in wolves. We found a fantastic artist, Eva Dutton, who has painted some beautiful pictures of wolves. If you'd like to view her work, there are links on the Dogcast site. And if you're in the UK, we have details of an exhibition of Eva's work and a workshop she's running at the end of March. Do check out the links for some lovely pictures. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs. Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. dogcast.com. That's DOGCAST radio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
Why do dogs bury their bones in the ground? Because they can't bury them in trees.